Hi, this is Susie Pratt, and I'll be reading a review of the movie Zoolander 2. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The movie Zoolander 2 was reviewed by Glenn Kenny for RogerEbert.com. He gave it 3 out of 4 stars. It's a comedy. It's rated PG-13 for crude and sexual content, a scene of exaggerated violence, and brief, strong language. The movie length is 102 minutes. It stars Ben Stiller, Owen Wilson, Will Ferrell, Penelope Cruz, Kristen Wiig, Benedict Cumberbatch, Christine Taylor, Cyrus Arnold, Justin Bieber, and Beck Bennett. And it is directed by Ben Stiller. Does America really need a sequel to the 2001 Ben Stiller starring and directed send-up of the fashion and supermodeling worlds and the apparently ceaseless vacuity thereof and therein? For the first 20 minutes or so of Zoolander 2, the answer is a pretty flat no. The sequel, again directed by and starring Stiller in the title role of Derek Zoolander, whose skull is so thoroughly empty that to call him an airhead would be an insult to air, along with Owen Wilson as counterpart dimbulb male model Hansel, and many others from the original cast, begins with a gag that's already been overplayed in the trailers. That is the assassination of pop star Justin Bieber, who, before he saunters off this mortal coil, takes a selfie while making a signature Derek Zoolander look. What follows is a multimedia personality, whatever happened to, sequence. Every TV news personality of note, save for maybe Brian Williams, adds a soundbite to the story, which features an arguably tasteless fictional disaster befalling a construction in downtown Manhattan close to the Hudson River. Soon, the audience sees a mountain lair in a snowy, windy, surrounding, and the title in the lower right-hand corner of the screen reads, Extreme Northern New Jersey. I'm a sucker for a good Jersey joke, but I still wasn't hooked. Eventually I was, though. Zoolander 2 is not just relentless in its joking, it becomes relentlessly clever in debunking itself as it goes along. This is barely a movie, I thought, as it hopped from one inane plot device to 80s music cue to 80s music video pastiche to inane plot point. But the observations about the fashion world got, if not sharper, I don't know enough about the contemporary fashion world to vouch for accuracy, then definitely more pointed, beginning with Kyle Mooney's portrayal of a hot new designer named Don Attari, whose aesthetic opinions on how much everything sucks and is stupid. Derek and Hansel have been persuaded via old friend Billy Zane to participate in Atari's fashion show in Rome, lorded over by a spectacularly pompous couture doyen named Alexania Ataz, played by a nearly unrecognizable Kristen Wiig. Ataz's shtick is elaborately mispronouncing English words, and this is hammered almost as insistently as is Derek's idiocy. The biggest comic risk in the movie ends up... The biggest comic risk the movie ends up taking, as it happens, is in scenes in which Derek doesn't get something. And this is entirely the case lot once Penelope Cruz, playing a member of Interpol, Fashion Crime Division, and invests him and Hansel in a world-saving or something mission. The character is literally so dumb that it's not funny, except it becomes funny by dint of the way it's not funny, and so on. And honestly, it then becomes very funny, funny enough that my wife observed that she thought I was going to have a stroke as I was laughing so much. I was also laughing hard enough that I stopped taking notes. So what more can I tell you about this movie? Well, there are enough cameos in the darn thing that you might eventually wonder why you yourself are not in it. The bit in which Benedict Cumberbatch appears as an apparently pan-gender supermodel named All does play fast and loose with the skirting ideological objectionability thing, but on the other hand, every character and personage depicted in this movie is utterly, one might say, even abjectly ridiculous. So for all to be depicted as not ridiculous might have constituted a progressively active judgment, but also would have been on the inconsistent side. Also, this is a movie that makes an elaborate joke about the prospect of a 13-year-old boy getting his heart carved out of his chest and the real-life denizens of the real-life fashion world attaining eternal youth by drinking his blood. Yes, you read that correctly. This is where Will Ferrell's fashion villain Mugatu comes in, along with more cameos and Cyrus Arnold, a very nervy tween in the role of Derek's wayward and purposefully chubby son. As the action gets more furious, and Owen Wilson in particular is given more and more of an opportunity to unspool his seemingly inexhaustible comic genius, it might be easy to miss the fact that Zoolander 2 bites a certain hand with more perspicacity than that displayed in Stiller's 2008 I Hate Hollywood effort Tropic Thunder. It takes a certain something to convince the likes of Tommy Hilfiger and Alexander Wang to show up and play themselves and depict those selves as eager to participate in ritual murder and cannibalism. Sounds pretty heavy-handed as satire goes, but the thing is, Zoolander 2 has indulged in so many inversions of its narrative by this time that the insult to fashionistas comes off as both entirely sincere and futilely insubstantial. But this is all better gist for some future Ivy League film studies class than this review. I laughed so much, my wife thought I was going to have a stroke. There's the blurb for you, Paramount. Thanks, Derek. Again, that was a review by Glenn Kenny at RogerEbert.com. I have a second review of Zoolander 2 by James Berardinelli, and he gave it 2 out of 4 stars. Fans of Ben Stiller's fashion satire Zoolander will be delighted to learn that Zoolander 2 offers more of the same. Of course, there are drawbacks to this approach. Those who were less than impressed by the 2001 comedy aren't likely to be converted by the sequel, limiting theater attendance to those who can dredge from their memories the first film's occasionally quotable lines of dialogue. Why now is a reasonable question. After all, it has been 15 years since Ben Stiller brought Zoolander to multiplexes. Although never a box office dynamo, Zoolander, much like Austin Powers, found new life on home video. Still, until recently, there was never much push to make a second installment. As with the first, the comedy falls into the Pink Panther, Dumb and Dumber, Anchorman category, but fewer of the jokes hit pay dirt than in Zoolander. There are some clever bits, and the satire is at times scathing, but on the whole, moments of hilarity are like oases in the desert of tedium. When Zoolander 2 isn't funny, the silliness strains the viewer's patience. Zoolander 2 transpires more than a decade after the first film. The title character, played by Stiller, has gone into seclusion living as a hermit crab following the death of his wife, Matilda. His son, Derek Jr., has lived in an orphanage since Derek was deemed an unfit father. In attempting to locate his son, Derek is reunited with former rival Hansel. He gains a new companion in sexy government agent Valentina when it becomes apparent that his personal quest dovetails with an investigation into the death of pop singers, all of whom die wearing Derek's patented blue steel look. Behind the nefarious goings-on is Derek's arch-nemesis Mugatu, played by Will Ferrell, and his new co-conspirator, Alexandra Ataz, played by Kristen Wiig. Their goal is to rid the world of its fashion icons, thereby giving Mugatu dominance in that arena. I earlier referenced Austin Powers. Zoolander 2 has a similar feel to the Mike Myers-fronted sequel, and although Crocodile Dundee was a better movie than Zoolander, there are similarities between the series' second installments. It comes down to a lack of narrative, a sense that all the potential was wrung out in the first movie, leaving behind little more than repetition and regurgitation. As is true of many second-tier comedies, the plot generates little interest, forcing the humor to absorb the weight of maintaining audience interest. The original Zoolander struggled with this. Zoolander 2 is even less successful. Cameos were one of the hallmarks of Zoolander, and there are more in Zoolander 2. Although some famous faces have only a couple seconds of screen time, others have much more, including dialogue. Notable appearances include Billy Zane, Kiefer Sutherland channeling Jack Bauer anger, Sting, Benedict Cumberbatch in a role he'll never live down, Susan Sarandon, Ariana Grande, John Malkovich, Katy Perry, Neil deGrasse Tyson, MC Hammer, Justin Bieber, who is killed off in the opening sequence, and just about every famous face name in the fashion industry. Stiller and Wilson channeled their inner morons, vying with each other to see who can say the most idiotic thing or twist his face into the most inane expression. Will Ferrell does his best Dr. Evil impersonation, and fellow SNL alum Kristen Wiig is unrecognizable under her makeup. Newcomers Penelope Cruz and Cyrus Arnold add little. The movie suffers from the dramatic reduction in time for Christine Taylor, whose Matilda was the most relatable character from the original. However, to the extent that Zoolander 2 is all about Stiller, he delivers the goods as ably as Jim Carrey, Paul Hogan, and Will Ferrell did in their second outings. Unfortunately, there's not a lot else here, making one suspect Zoolander would have been better left as a standalone cult classic. So those are the two reviews of Zoolander 2, and my interpretation of that is if you're feeling really silly, it might be fun to go see. All right, I hope you've enjoyed it, and thank you so much for listening.